So I'm here in Manchester with Fiona.
Yes.
You've just given us a Greenham songbook.
Yeah.
Which is brilliant. And what was the other thing you
Banners and Badges. It was an exhibition we did at Creative Recycling Gallery in Chorlton.
Oh,
about wow. 10 years ago, because we felt that people didn't know why we were doing what we were doing, which yeah. even though we've earned a reasonable living out of it, and so as many artists that we've had there, it is not for profit.
Yeah.
And so that didn't fit into the whole theme, shall we say, of where we are in Chorlton, which yeah. is, you know, you need to make a buck.
And culture
and so,
in general.
And so we've hung on. We're actually retiring now, and we've done 20 years
wow,
in Chorlton. But also we did the 20 years previous to that, as from Greenham. And that's how a lot of Manchester women started, because there was a lot of creativity, a lot of banners making. We did the Pacific newsletter that
yeah.
went out for years. When I say years, it felt like years, 86, 87, 88. And you'd be up all night trying to publish
yeah.
it. You know, it was a big thing, because a lot of us were involved with when Lee, John and Lorenza came over for the visit from the Pacific Islands, where the testing had carried on. So, I mean, the Manchester group were involved in, obviously, Greenham initially, but also that spread out into the mining
yeah.
of all the uranium, and then the testing of uranium, and then the storage of uranium.
Wow.
So we were also very active around Capenhurst and Sellafield. So there was a whole,
yeah.
you know, I think it was very, very educative for a lot of us, you know, and there was always somebody that wanted to push it even further.
Mm.
And also we became a group of supporting women in prisons, because we've got Style Women Prison down the road, and some of Greenham women were coming up to Style.
Yeah.
But then that put us into a situation of ordinary women that weren't campaigning, but they shouldn't have been in prison.
Yeah.
So we created a safe house in Hume, where family could come and stay there and visit women, but also somewhere where women could go when they came out. So that was only for about a year and a half we managed to maintain that, because it was really, financially,
tough. Yeah.
really, really tough. So it was a group that brought together suburb groups of Hume, Wally Range, I mean, a number of different ones.
Yeah.
I was then in Wally Range. And that became what's called the Manchester Umbrella Group. And it was Manchester Umbrella Group that we organised busloads of people to go down.
But also, to Greenham.
Yeah, but also when Cruz came out, and if
yeah.
we weren't down there, there was the, you know, the tree. We didn't have WhatsApp. The tree that Lynette Edwell would start off, or she would get a signal to her. She would then spread it out. And so we would all get a whole
this
pile of
other
people.
This is the telephone tree.
The telephone tree. And we'd all end up. And you would groan, actually, in the morning when you were off to work. You'd think, oh, Lord, I've got to do all these phone calls quickly. And then at 5 o'clock, we'd all be in Manchester with the loudhailers, telling people Cruz was out and what
oh,
it
really?
Meant, and giving out leaflets. And quite a lot of people really didn't want to know, but there were a lot of people that did.
Yeah.
And it was, I mean, the only thing, what motivated us, none of us were activists, we were all ordinary people going about our business, really, in terms of Greenham. It was fear.
Was it?
You know, and you probably can imagine, you're not so much younger, I mean, perhaps you are.
My mum took me to Greenham, so
right.
I'm a Greenham kid.
Right.
But
you're
I remember the fear
kid, yeah.
of the bomb.
And I took my lad, you know,
yeah.
Jack, and it was a huge impact in his life. And
yeah.
even now, he
yeah,
will
I
talk
can remember
to people.
It viscerally.
And he's now, what, 46? And he spent all his time climbing trees there, you know what I mean? He had
yeah.
a wonderful time every
yeah.
weekend.
Yeah, I remember
and school
being
holiday.
Brilliant.
Exactly. Absolutely. brilliant
great,
playground.
Yeah.
And with all these mostly lovely people,
yeah,
99% lovely
anything.
People.
No
exactly.
one ever thought I was precocious
and
there.
And
they
everybody
like,
was a parent,
yeah.
and everybody was a child.
I felt
and that
so
was,
safe.
It was that was educative.
That's
as well.
A lovely way of putting it. Everyone
yeah, yeah.
was a parent, everyone was a child. Yeah, lovely.
Yeah, yeah.
It felt brilliant.
So that is just a sort of quick summary. And Levenshulme as well was very, very significant in all that. And it was the groups that had already formed to do with, we had in Chorlton army barracks.
Yes.
And not in Chorlton, in Wally Range. And so we didn't like tanks coming down our roads when
Ooh.
They were doing their exercises. Levenshulme were very, very significant in the group they already had, which was anti-nuclear and CND, and so was Hume. So they gradually became, you know, because it's often women anyway, they became women's support groups, and they always had representatives that went to the Manchester umbrella group, which always met every week in the town hall for free in the evening.
Wow.
Tea and biscuits left out from the daytime. Oh, it was life of Riley. No security, no nothing. We could have all lived there. Actually, nobody would have taken any notice, you know. Now you can't get home almost past the front door.
Okay.
So we had meetings there and action meetings, but also about how to support with, you know, Gore-Tex bags, you know, because that was when Gore-Tex first came out. And we all bought Gore-Tex bags to go down there. And then we bought ones for people who were all permanently down when we realised they didn't have them, and sent our own down in the end. And also who was taking the wood down. We took a lot of wood.
Brilliant.
Not to mention those who had to go on the dope run. There were lots of dope runs.
What's the dope runs?
Marijuana.
Really?
Yeah. There was a lot of dope around. Yeah, and some people, no, couldn't possibly do that. So you had your dope run committee, do you know what I mean? Well, anything to keep people going at times.
Absolutely.
Do you know what I mean? It wasn't because people were out of their heads at all.
No, it was just
It was like keeping going. And there really wasn't any alcohol.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It was vegan, no alcohol.
But so it was just occasionally
it was a dope run, but I mean it was fresh leaf, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was proper stuff.
Brilliant.
Yeah, nobody wanted the combination rubbish, you know. You had to have the pure leaf. But also money for Dole. There was also Camp Dole, as you probably know. You know, so it was also fundraising for Camp Dole. But yeah, I mean, it was, and we also had a lot of older, I mean, I was then in my early 30s. We had a lot of people at my age that were there that didn't want to go on cut the fence or stand on somebody's shoulders or go in and take the chances. So a lot of people who were part of our group that were my age were writing letters on the whole legal side and the government side. So it's a very active group.
Yeah, really
and
active.
And the age group, you know, it was really 15 to probably 80 in the group, you know. So it was very, very positive.
It's a really dynamic sounding.
Yeah, and it wasn't like anybody was trying to get a group together. It
it just happened,
you know.
That energy. What do you think? Is that a Manchester thing? Or was it just a sign of the times? Or
sign of the times. I mean, I really wouldn't know. But I think it was motivated by a lot of fear and sense of impotency, that it was an expression of something. And I think because we were all in shock of the knowledge and the education, it actually makes you non-judgmental. Mm. If you can only judge something if you've got information, and I think if you haven't got the information and something's a bit of a shock to you, the whole system, you know, what's going on here, then you don't judge people because they're older or a different culture or they're eating meat.
Yeah,
I mean, that was possibly said silently, but nonetheless, there wasn't the same sort of judgment that you might have had in something else at that time.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that was very attractive.
Yeah.
I found it very attractive. Wasn't too bothered about the cosmic side. I wasn't actually into the cosmic side.
And didn't do Greengate very
much? Well, no. I knew quite a number. And quite a number of our Manchester members were people who supported Greengate. You know, Jane Graham, who I'd hoped might have come today. She was very involved. And then there was Jean Alcock and Alma Brack, who supported Bluegate. And you were the last people you would have thought that would have taken on Bluegate.
Really?
Do you know what I mean? Because it was just like so anarchic. And these were two people still, you know, really curly hair and sort of, and they had the picnic and they had the sort of the baskets, and it was all terribly proper, you know. But I also went to Blue Gate because it was the Manchester Gate to begin with.
Oh, was
and
it?
Then, because quite a lot of members, because I had a bigger vehicle, I was giving a lift down sometimes to 8 people.
Gosh.
And quite a few of the people either went to Green Gate, Violet, or Orange. So Orange was my last drop-off. So I'd be so tired after driving down, I would end up at Orange Gate rather than coming back to Blue Gate.
Gosh,
so and then there were a number of us that gathered in Orange Gate, and we said, there's still a lot of space where Cruise comes out of the gates. We really ought to monitor it. So when we went down after the first year, I suppose, we decided we were Red Gaters, and we opened at Red Gate. So it wasn't open when we weren't there, but we were most weekends.
So what made you open Red Gate then?
It was the position it was. That Cruise was coming out often at Violet, not at Indigo, but at Violet, and then at Orange. It would either be one of the others. And they were obviously just strategically looking to see where they could avoid us from the inside and the police. And so they started to, there was a couple of occasions where they opened up Redgate. So we thought, right, well, we're there on the spot.
Brilliant.
And then, of course, there were some extra trees there. It was extremely nice.
Oh.
The soil was easy to make shit pits. It wasn't hard soil. So you have to consider these
things.
You do,
absolutely.
You know? And there was quite a nice area, but it was quite enclosed, so you could keep an eye for, you know,
nice.
For vigilantes and stuff like
yeah.
that. But, I mean, that was where we experienced, in Orange Gate and Red Gate, experienced an awful lot of zapping, you know, yeah. And that was real. That was absolutely, people sort of saying it was a magic.
Talk to me a bit about that, because people might not know what that means. And
right,
I know
well, zapping, I presume, is some sort of, I didn't get too involved in the science of it, because when it's happened to you, you're so alarmed and weakened by it, physically for a short time, but mentally, because you realise the state were doing that to you, the state yeah. that you're employed by. I was a teacher at that time, and it was backed up by the police. You know, just like we shouldn't have had the bailiffs, they were backed up by the police.
Horrendous.
You know, there was horrendous violence that went on. But the zapping was electronic, and I remember sitting there, Glenys had a van, and I had a van, and they were both facing each other, and we were just on a log waiting to see if other people were going to arrive or something like that, I can't remember. And we were chatting quite nicely into the night. And they obviously decided to try out zapping at that point. And we felt very peculiar and disorientated. We didn't quite know what was happening. We got into our vans to go and join other people, and the vans didn't work. Neither batteries.
Oh,
so they'd actually zapped our batteries that were completely out of battery. I mean, that's how strong it was.
And well, could you hear it or feel
No. It's just totally invisible. Totally invisible, which is so insidious.
Yeah.
And then there was another, and that took us a bit, and then we had to try and work out what had happening. We both said, because we had some zapping at Orange Gate, and I was very disorientated, and it took me about a day to get over that when I was at Orange Gate. But this was a period in between, and I think we'd started to forget about it. You know how you do. And so when that happened, we were physically really affected, but we managed to push in the end one of the vehicles sufficiently, the two of us, to try and get it to, you know, like roll it, because it was on a bit of a decline there.
So we could get away.
But it was very, very frightening. Very frightening. And I think that was the beginning of me feeling, because having a child, having a family, you know, you sort of think, not sure what I'm doing.
I don't know what they're doing, and I don't know how
Because I was taking, I wasn't taking a lot of risks. I was cutting the fence and stuff like that, but I wasn't dancing on the silos. I wasn't going as far as that, because I didn't want to spend any time in prison. Because as a woman on your own, the next thing is custody.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
And I'm gay, and at that time that wasn't acceptable. That was the first thing they would have thrown at me.
Absolutely.
So I didn't want to lose my child.
No.
So I was really holding back in lots of occasions and supporting other things. You know,
it's tons of things.
Would, you know.
Yeah. the enormous list at the beginning of the interview.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, obviously, in that period of time, there was a lot of things, because you'll know, you know, from your experience, every day was different. You couldn't say, you know, week in, week out, oh, this is going to happen, that was going to happen. Everything was different. You had to think on your head, you know.
On your feet,
On your feet, absolutely.
And do you feel that it's something that's carried through to other parts of your life since...
Oh, God, totally, completely. I mean, it was such an education that, I mean, by this time I was probably more socially aware of the politics. I wasn't when I was first on my own, which my son was 18 months. I was just very, very immersed in pulling things together in a life. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It wasn't political. At that point, I hadn't gone to uni, but shortly after I did. So I came out with some ideas of socialism. But that experience... and the sort of socialist feminist background that was about a year before that were gathering in Manchester that I was part of, gave me some sort of chance to sort of interpret, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So when it actually came to it, the whole experience was so, so educational that you could not. So we continued, Glenys and I, we were teachers, she was in primary, I was in adult education. We both continued. To make badges and banners for all sorts of things.
Oh,
and then people started to ask us for our own artwork.
Oh,
and that's where
brilliant.
It started, which was all recycled materials. It's all been made out of waste.
Which is such a on-point thing now, isn't it?
Yeah,
but
exactly.
Of course, nothing is new on Earth.
We had people say, well, I love that, but I won't buy it because you've got anti-nuclear on your label at the back. And that is waste materials.
Good
and you just have to, you know, it was, and when you think the other way around now, it's almost like if you hadn't.
Yeah. Now it's a massive cachet,
isn't it?
So it's
quite interesting how that's gone. But our complete mindset has been influenced by that period of time, which was only probably 3 years, 4 years maximum of going. And it's also my son as well, because I've heard him talk to other people when he doesn't know I'm listening. And I can see that when they talk about those sorts of things, even though he's entirely ordinary, he's not an activist, he's an artist as well, and running a gown on a business.
But
all his friends are very ordinary, do you know what I mean? Absolutely bog standard, and they're quite, I mean, he's quite proud of being ordinary, I'm quite proud of, you know, that he's ordinary. I mean, that was always the idea, was not to keep on passing on, because I had quite a lot of privilege in my, you know, in earlier life, and not to keep passing that on in that particular way. That you've got to find your own way.
Not the entitlement thing.
And not borrow on your past all the time, do you know what I mean? Which makes that whole entitlement stuff that I can't
stand.
We're all stuck with, aren't we?
Yeah, but it's not healthy for us or our society. Absolutely. And he talks about it to his friends, does he?
Oh, he talks to me about his friends, and as soon as anything crops up, he will actually make a reference. And I think, God, I didn't realise that was going on. Oh, which is really interesting. He's had his own take.
Yeah, that's really interesting, isn't it?
But I think there are a lot of children, you know, that it's meant a lot too, and you've obviously picked all that up. You know?
Absolutely. It totally changed the way my mum brought us up. Like, it's had a massive impact on my entire... And similarly to you, that I started... Because my mum started my feminist journey... when I was five and she was at camp, I started my own feminist production hub 20 years ago,
you know.
Marie Knowles.
She was a
local, so we lived in Camberley at the time, and she was a visitor to mostly Greengate and did, similar to you, lots of telephone tree, newsletters, cruise watch, night watch, bringing supplies, my dad running the creche, my dad making the sandwiches,
that's brilliant, all that. Yeah. Actually.
He was one of the few guys that survived the Greenham coal.
Yeah. You know, there were quite a number, and it shouldn't, I mean, I know there was the whole problem, and in Molesworth there were problems, weren't there? Of, you know, mixed campaigns, you know. And, of course, the whole problem... I mean, I think it was quite reasonable to make it a women's
Brilliant,
camp, because then that meant that if men were lurking around in the night, you knew they were up to no good. And you couldn't have had that if you'd had a mixed
camp. No, you couldn't.
And obviously it was mixed to begin with. You know, its origins, you know, were mixed from the march. But, I mean, there are lots of really, really... I mean, it wouldn't have actually survived without some of the effort that was put in.
Yeah.
Not just from men, but from the wider society. It was always seen as being Greenham and the dirty women and the toilets and all the rest of it. You know, but I mean, it was such a wide encumbrance. And even though you had a lot of people in Newbury that were sort of just didn't want it to happen. Yeah. And I once met, actually, on the crash circuit, a son... of somebody whose parents lived on that side that were part of the ones that said they're coming to the toilet in our back front garden, because that hit all the newspapers, including The Guardian. They said how awful this is. And when he met us in Newham, he said that's absolutely awful. And then we told him a different side of the story.
And then he was like,
but he really had walls up.
Yeah.
Absolutely walls up.
We met someone just the other day as part of this tour who we showed the film we're showing later and things.
Yeah.
And she, I'm not sure why she had come, but for whatever reason, we had a very warm experience with the whole room. And then she pulled me back at the end and said, I want you to know that my son was stationed at Greenham as a young man, his first job out of the RAF, and he's been a misogynist his whole life, and I blame those women.
Well,
I bet it wasn't them, but anyway.
Yeah, but funnily enough, we had at Redgate, there were a lot of soldiers there inside that were guarding Greenham for the US, you know, which the whole thing was such a paradox, really. And they were in tears sometimes. They couldn't cope. And they were drugged up to the nines because they'd come from Ireland.
Oh,
they'd come from all the troubles.
So
and that was their rest.
PTSD anyway,
to getting us locked.
Oh, no.
And a lot of us became these sort of surrogate aunties.
Yeah.
You know, and they'd come to the fence and they'd sort of... And they'd get told off by sergeants if they were found. But they were in really bad shape.
Well, that was sort of what I thought. That I know a lot of stories actually where they had to keep moving the soldiers on because they got on well with the women.
Yeah.
And there were talks through the fence and it would start to change the soldiers' minds and things.
Yeah.
And they had to,
the
government had to employ a 6-week policy to keep, no one could be stationed there for more than 6 weeks, else they'd start to basically sort of see the other side.
Absolutely.
So, and I did invite this woman to sort of tell me what might have happened. And she.
I also think it made it worse when, what was it? The Liverpool MP.
The Hillsborough disaster.
No, the. Heseltine
said
they'll be shot, women will be shot.
Yes.
And after that, a lot of soldiers, you could see they were not coping because they may be the ones that would have to shoot.
That's really interesting, because no one did ever shoot a Greenham woman.
No.
I know other terrible things happened. I'm not saying that it was all well behaved, but they didn't do that. And that was, like you say, an open order. And I just think, I could imagine being the soldier faced with that choice in peacetime in your own country. With people who are like your own mum and your own girlfriend and your own sisters just there.
Anyway, I don't know if that's...
It's fascinating. Yeah. Oh, really fascinating, Fiona. Is there anything that you else that I you would like to have asked that you haven't mentioned that you'd like to make sure we know?
No, it's hard. No, because I didn't sort of come with thoughts in my head.
No.
It's just that it's just there,
it's great,
isn't it?
Yeah.
So, I mean, obviously, there are always things after. I'm very happy if you give me an email and I can always write and add things to
it. Yeah, that would be lovely.
An email to contact you or
whoever, I'll do that in one moment. Thank you so much. What a fascinating interview.